Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pennywise Podcast, the best pod around personal finance. We're part of the Lee Enterprises Podcast Network and brought to you in partnership with WalletHub, the best personal finance app in the whole wide world. You can sign up for WalletHub to save money, improve your credit, and budget better. I'm your host, John Kiernan. I'm the managing editor at WalletHub, and I've been covering personal finance for more than 15 years. My goal is to help you manage your money better and hopefully have a little bit of fun in the process. As always, be sure to let us know if you have any questions or if there's something you want us to cover. We'll do our best to get right on it. Today, we're talking about the best credit cards and how to go about choosing the right one for you. As we discussed a couple pods ago, credit cards are something most of us are very familiar with, but not something we've necessarily mastered. A lot of us have subpar cards or end up using the right cards the wrong way. Credit cards are not one size fits all, and you have to know what you're looking for to find a good match. Either that, or you just need a good recommendation from a trustworthy source. That, of course, is where WalletHub comes in. My team at WalletHub regularly evaluates more than 1,500 credit card offers to identify the best deals in the most popular categories. We actually just made our best of 2026 selections, so they're hot off the press, and you can find the full list on WalletHub.com or the app. I'll also give you a quick rundown of what to expect from the best cards now before our guest joins us here in a minute. For starters, we estimate that the best credit cards can save users up to $2,000 or even a bit more in some cases during the first 2 years you have them. That's based on each card's rewards or 0% financing offer and data on average credit card eligible spending. Basically, we look at data from sources like the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and we determine which expenses can people have or can be put on a credit card, and then apply various spending profiles to the different cards to identify the best one. So we let the data lead us and based on what will save users the most money. Now, if you're wondering kind of what can contribute and produce those types of savings, some of the best cards offer at least 2% cash back or double miles on all purchases. So you're getting basically twice the market average in rewards at a minimum. Other cards give 5% back or more in designated bonus categories. So you can use those to really reduce the cost of particular types of purchases you make on a regular basis. Some of the best cards also offer initial bonuses worth $300 to $750 or even more, and you can earn those for spending a certain amount within the first few months your account is open. And some also have introductory 0% APR promotions that last anywhere from 18 to 24 months on the best cards. So you can really kind of avoid interest for a very long time and either finance new purchases or pay off high interest debt while saving a lot of money. Considering how high normal credit card interest rates are right now, 0% for up to 2 years, for example, could save you a boatload and make it way easier and way faster to get out of debt. Of course, the very best credit cards overall require good or excellent credit, which means you need a credit score of at least 700 to have a good shot at getting approved. But there are plenty of cards for people with lower scores that offer solid rewards without charging annual fees. And so those cards are great for building credit and saving a little bit of money and doing it as cost effectively as possible. Again, you can check out the full list on WalletHub, including the best cards for dining, gas, groceries, travel, and other major expenses. We've got a whole lot more info on the website. You can also learn a lot more from our guest. To help you select the right credit card for your needs and avoid common mistakes, I'd like to welcome our guest, Jeffrey Haber. Jeffrey is a professor of accounting at Iona University and the senior director for finance with the Commonwealth Fund. Thanks for joining us, Jeffrey.
Thanks for having me, John.
To start, can you give the listeners a little bit of background about your work at Iona and the Commonwealth Fund, kind of what your responsibilities are and what the kind of work is like?
Sure. At Iona University, generally I teach the intermediate accounting sequence. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I pick up an introductory class in financial or managerial, and I also usually teach research to the graduate accounting majors. At the Commonwealth Fund, I'm responsible for the accounting and tax functions, mm-hmm. and I also participate in the investment committee.
Interesting. I bet that gets heated sometimes with which way you guys want to go. And I saw that you have some background in business as well. You started your own company and sold it?
A bunch of companies. I started out in laundromats. I had owned a couple, so sold them, then started another one from scratch. This is in the late 1900s. And then I also started an academic journal, which I ran for 20 years, became highly rated and sold that. And about 6 years ago, got into bowling alleys.
Oh, wow. You've got a diverse group of things right there, but they all sound like they're pretty good money makers. I've always heard that laundromats kind of print cash, so that's pretty good.
Well, better than laundering cash.
Yeah, of course, of course. There you go. How'd you get into the bowling alleys? That just kind of piqued my interest. Is it a kind of cheap asset? Or
no, it was actually, I was thinking, what am I going to do in retirement, which for me was just another type of work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was thinking, what businesses could I acquire? So my first love really would have been a golf course.
Oh, okay.
So I spent years looking for golf courses until I was able to come to the realization that I'm never going to make money with a golf course. So I said, all right, I definitely want to spend my time now looking at something where I know I'm going to make money, which was funeral homes.
Mm-hmm.
And funeral homes that came with an ancillary business like a cemetery, a crematorium, so something just more than the funeral home. And I definitely found somewhere I could make money. But I didn't really think about waking up in retirement and saying, I'm going to my funeral home as bringing joy to my day.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's when bowling alleys came to mind.
Interesting.
Which so
you
lower
were,
cost
were you
to
a
get
bowling
into.
Fan?
Only as a young child.
Okay.
And I thought I could make money. So I was looking for, you can't buy a bowling alley in a metropolitan area because the land has too high an alternative value. So I found one in Buffalo, which met my requirements. It had to be 15 minutes from an airport that I could use for a nonstop flight and about within an hour from the airport. So I found the bowling alley. That the airport was 15 minutes from my house, and the bowling alley was 15 minutes from that airport.
That's great. So you had very kind of strict criteria, and you kind of waited until you found the perfect opportunity, essentially.
Exactly right.
That's very smart. And so, yeah, I mean, that's very interesting. And you've expanded to multiple bowling alleys since then?
Not yet. So far, it's still the one.
Gotcha. Well, that sounds very cool. As we'll get right to the, I guess, business at hand a little more. And I know kind of, I guess, entrepreneurial pursuits and accounting are more your focus, but I do want to ask you a couple of questions. About credit cards first, because that's kind of more of our focus, and a lot of people that listen to this program aren't to the stage of buying and selling businesses yet. They're kind of still working their way up. So, what do you think normal consumers and small business owners are not kind of accounting for properly when it comes to choosing a credit card to kind of marry your focus with the topic here?
So credit cards, I think, are an important way to establish credit, an easy way to pay for things. But we're in a little different age today where a lot of merchants are passing on their cost of processing credit cards. So if you're thinking about it's convenient way to pay for things, it may be adding 2.5% to 4% to the price of whatever you're buying. And that might be a lot to pay for convenience.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Do you find that merchants are adding that surcharge on credit cards in particular, or they're kind of passing that cost on to everyone, and so people who are paying with cash or debit cards are kind of indirectly supporting the cost of credit card processing?
It depends on where you are and what the local laws are on how they phrase it. Sometimes they have to charge a higher price and then offer a discount for cash, and sometimes they're allowed to add an add-on for the credit card. But in the end, if the plan is for them to recoup those costs, using the credit card will be more expensive.
Gotcha. Unless they can, of course, get enough rewards or something like that to overcome the cost. And one thing that we point out that a lot of people don't account for is that you can just get a credit card and not make purchases with it and still build credit. And so you're getting that function of it without the potential cost that you were talking about.
Exactly. It depends on your use case.
Yeah. So based on your experience, and you have it on, I'm sure, from a consumer side, from a business owner side, and also from the teaching angle, What would you say is the best way to go about choosing a credit card? I know some people may just see a commercial they like. Oh, Kevin Hart's on the Chase commercials. Let me get that. That's not the way to go about it. But how should they be doing it?
Well, I could analogize that to a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
When you pick a cell phone, you don't say which cell phone will make the best, has the best call quality for me, because most people, that's the last thing they use their cell phone for. It has many uses,
yeah,
besides making phone calls. And credit cards have many uses aside from just charging things.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them come with benefits, whether it be airline miles, hotel points, early check-in, free luggage. It may come with airline lounge access. There's just so many or cash back. That's another big one.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, what are you going to use the card for? Which of these benefits matter most? And compare that against the cost, the annual fee for the credit card.
Yeah, that's great advice. We kind of recommend people do that as well. Depending on kind of your situation, if you're more advanced and you have good credit, you can do something that we call the island approach, is basically figure out what transactions you're going to be making, find the best terms for that, and only focus on those terms that are actually going to affect you. And then on your other cards, you can do the same thing. So you're essentially getting the best aggregate collection of terms that you can find. And if you use them strategically, you can save a lot of money. Now, not everyone's in a position to do that responsibly, but that is kind of the ideal approach. You were kind of getting this to this in terms of pricing things out, figuring how much you can save, and factoring the cost. But I think a lot of people, especially kind of in the intermediate stages of things, figure out what kind of credit card they want. Like, oh, I want something for travel rewards, or I want the cash back, or what have you. And they can kind of figure out maybe a handful of cards that would suit that need, and then they kind of get stuck. What is your best advice for kind of crunching the numbers and making the optimal choice there?
My view is you should almost have a portfolio of credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
Because not one credit card accomplishes every benefit. It's usually a trade-off. Usually you can get a cash back or you can get airline miles.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a low fee with a high interest rate. So think about what your needs are. Let's say you travel. Let's say you're going to charge and keep a balance.
Yeah.
So you want to have a card with a low interest rate if you're going to keep a balance.
Mm-hmm.
That probably won't give you some of the other benefits.
Yeah.
So maybe look to get another card that gives you those travel benefits you may want. And then think about the fees involved. And pick the cards or collection of cards that give you the lowest cost, the lowest interest rate, and the most benefits for what you want to accomplish. If you're someone that doesn't plan to carry a balance, doesn't really travel a lot, you want a low fee and a card that'll just give you, I mean, cash back won't matter, but you'd pick any benefit
mm-hmm.
that says, okay, I'm getting the card, I'm paying this fee. For that fee, is there anything that'll give me something, even if I don't plan on using it a lot?
Yeah, exactly. A lot of, they've kind of, it's more common now. There are several cards these days offering 2% cash back on all purchases and no annual fee, which I think would work great for what you're talking about, just kind of the person who needs it for maybe occasional use, who definitely isn't going to travel and doesn't want to overpay. You can get basically double the average rewards and not have any fees. So you can keep that account open for a long time too. And your point about if you're going to carry a balance, not doing it on the car, like a rewards card is a good point too, because if you're using one card for everything, the everyday purchases you make with that card are going to accrue interest right along with the debt you're carrying from month to month. But if you segment it and use one card for everyday purchases and one card for revolving debt, the everyday purchases will have a grace period and you'll be able to pay the in full every month and not accrue interest. So a lot of people overlook that as well. I just wanted to add that since you kind of brought it up there. And just to kind of bring things back, I guess, a little bit to your main focus of accounting, what do you think the biggest, let's say people find the right credit card for their needs, they get it, what are the biggest budgeting and accounting mistakes that people tend to make after that, like tracking their expenses and making sure they're not overspending, those types of things?
Well, I like charging things, especially if they're going to be tax deductible, because if I pay cash, I need to get a receipt. Mm-hmm. Charging alleviates me from some of that receipt collection. It's a documentation of what I charged and where.
Yeah.
Now, as far as personal credit goes, having a card is good. Building credit is good. If you have a card with a balance and you do a lot of charging and it gets you some benefit and you pay it off every month, so you have no incurred fees or interest, mm-hmm. excellent. But keep in mind, your balance is going to be high on a credit report, except for that day you pay it off and maybe the week after until you start incurring charges again.
Yeah.
So it will be an up and down on a credit rating. Until the credit rating really sees that you usually carry this balance and is usually no interest involved. So that's something else to keep in mind.
Yeah, definitely.
But having a card, and the first card should be the one you try never to cancel. Because one of the things that's part of the credit rating is how long you've had the oldest card for.
Mm-hmm.
So you want a card that even if you'll never use, you don't mind paying a fee. Or especially, as you pointed out, a no-fee card would be excellent for that purpose. To give you that longest duration card.
Yeah, exactly. And then if you want to charge a purchase every once in a while, you can do to keep the account open. And if it gets kind of closed, it's not the biggest deal in the world. But yeah, some they will close it after a certain period of inactivity a lot of times. So some people, to keep it open, will do those small purchases. And I think, I guess, just to kind of wrap things up, since you have a lot of experience with a lot of different aspects of finance, are there any important personal finance tips that you think people should know about but really don't, or may know about but aren't acting on enough?
If you're going to charge and plan to carry a balance, mm-hmm. you really have to consider how much you could afford to pay above the minimum payment.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're only making the minimum payment, that balance is going to be open for a long time. And credit cards usually carry fairly high interest. I mean, just to pick a number, 20% would not be unusual. I've generally seen 18 to 24% as a typical credit card interest rate.
Just sorry to cut you off. 30%, a lot of cards for like fair or bad credit these days are offering above 30%, so it's even worse.
It's even worse. So if you're going to carry a balance, you really have to think about being able to pay much more than the minimum payment. Mm-hmm. You're carrying a balance because you're making a purchase that you've decided you need or want, and you can't pay it all at once. So think about realistically what payments you could make against that purchase over time and how soon you could pay it off given the amount of interest that'll be charged each month.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I know kind of spending more than you can afford to repay is not always possible to plan, but whenever possible, if you can kind of have the foresight that you're going to need to make a big purchase, applying for a 0% APR card ahead of time and using that and paying it off within that 0% period can minimize your interest charges and kind of negate that high interest concern that you were talking about as well. And if you find yourself in a situation where you have high interest debt and you've managed to maintain a good or excellent credit score, you can then transfer it to 0% balance transfer card and only pay perhaps a 3% to 5% fee. So there are definitely ways to get around that as well. And I just occurred to me while you're talking previously, you were talking about utilization or the balances reported the credit bureaus and how that can hurt your credit score. One thing to note there is that the balance reported to the credit bureaus as of the end of your billing period when your statement's generated is what's used for credit utilization. So they compare that to your credit limit to see how much you're using. If you make a payment before your billing period ends, you can essentially artificially lower the balance reported to the credit bureaus, and then you can make another payment before the due date to make sure you pay in full and you're not incurring interest charges. So that's one way to kind of get around potential credit score damage from high credit utilization. And the other thing I want to add is that people a lot of times get too worked up in seeing their credit score change day to day or month to month when there's no reason they need the best possible credit score in the, like, the next few months, like, you really need to worry about it in the run-up to applying for a mortgage or an auto loan, where, like, a slightly lower credit score will cost you a lot of money. Otherwise, it's kind of like paper gains in the stock market, essentially. It's like, it's worth knowing about, but it's not the it's not printed in ink.
No, clearly not. And on any given day, among the three major credit reporting agencies, my score is 100 points different between some of them.
Yeah.
And if you sit down on a major purchase where they check your credit, you might look up online to see what your credit score is. Mm-hmm. That same agency might report something different to a merchant because they use a little different scoring depending what system the merchant subscribes to.
Yeah, and a lot of lenders have in-house modifications too, so they have their own kind of models. That's what we usually tell people, that you can't get your quote-unquote real credit score, the credit score the lender is definitely going to use. So just kind of find one model and make sure you're headed in the upward direction. It's probably going to kind of turn out well across the board. And you're someone who's, I'm sure, gotten some business financing in the past and it's turned out great, and it doesn't seem like you're too hung up on that 100-point differential or anything like that.
No, I know there's variation depending on how they go about doing their estimates. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't worry too much. Some lenders use an average. Some use the highest. Some use the lowest. Some only use one of the three. So it all depends, but it's never been an issue, and it's nothing I get too worried about. As long as I'm a careful consumer, good use of credit, model what I can pay and what I could afford, it generally turns out fine.
That's great advice. I don't want to take up any more of your time. I think it's been a pleasure talking to you. I think the listeners will love hearing about everything you had to offer. So thanks so much for joining me today. And hopefully we'll have you back soon.
I appreciate the opportunity and I look forward to it.
Okay, I think that's about it for today. It's been a lot of fun learning a little bit more about money with all of you. And you know what? Let's do it again pretty soon. Maybe talk about love and money a little something for Valentine's Day. We'll see. Because if you're not penny wise, your credit card could be fool's gold when it should be a prize. Thanks again to Lee Enterprises and WalletHub for helping put all this together. And thanks to you for listening.